Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, it's my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello, and as always, it's good to be back. Although this time, it's been a while. It's been a hot minute.
Look, Simon, if there's two things in life that we love, it's the pub and it's mini golf. And I've got perfect topic today that combines both of these things. We're going to talk about the Guinness World Record in mini golf. Now, the past year has been amazing to see the increased recognition from Guinness World Records in mini golf. We've got a page now for the World Mini Golf Sport Federation. We've got a lot more mini golf related records, and we're going to talk through some of them today and talk with some of the holders of those records. So it's been great to see this increased recognition. There was even a picture of mini golf on the most recent Guinness World Records book. So I've loved this. Simon, I assume you've been following this along as well, as excited as I've been.
Yeah, of course. I would imagine the type of mind that mini golf appeals to in so many of us, we're all quite similar, that this sort of statistical record breaking and, you know, tiny little stabs at immortality appeals as well. So, you know, I grew up, as many of us would have, in the 80s, 90s. And so I was born in 1986 and we had the Guinness Book of Records on the shelf from my birth year. And I obsessed over it as a kid. Mm. And I thought how awesome that would be to one day be in there or to attempt one of those. And one thing I've noticed since playing mini golf competitively, I'm not alone.
Absolutely. Well, let's find out who you're not alone with. Joining us today to talk about Guinness World Records in mini golf, we have four people who are officially amazing. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, Richard Gottfried, Cole Hetzel, Greg Newport and Martin Williams. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Richard, let's start with you. Some people have been following your mini golf story for a long time. You've done a lot of things to increase exposure in the world of mini golf, running a mini golf blog, collecting memorabilia for a mini golf museum. You must have been very excited when you did start to see this increased recognition from the Guinness Book of Records. Can you talk a little bit about what the early days looked like and then how you became involved?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic, isn't it? It's one of those things that, as Simon said, I think we've all grew up with Guinness World Records. I think it's you know, internationally renowned. It's something that's well respected, worldwide interest. You know, it's, and like Simon said as well, it's something you look at a book when you're a kid and think, well, how do you get that? What, you know, what record could I try and set or anything like that? And yeah, as you say, Emily, my wife, and I have been traveling around predominantly the UK, but some overseas tours and trips as well, and playing crazy golf since September 2006, and doing so much in mini golf, blogging, playing tournaments, visiting courses, uncovering courses, finding abandoned ones, derelict ones, and playing some brilliant ones as well. And I was looking back and it was actually summer 2022, so last summer. Uh-huh. Guinness World Records reached out. They'd been discussing internally, you know, topics for the Guinness World Records book for 2024, so next year's book, which is out now and available from all good bookstores. So everyone should, if you're in mini golf and you haven't yet got it, get out there and buy it and check out the website as well. They got in touch and they've been discussing internally about mini golf, or crazy golf, adventure golf, miniature golf, putt-putt, you know, across all of their various offices around the world. And everyone was saying mini golf, mini golf, mini golf. It needs to be something we look at. Yeah. I jumped to the chance to work with them, very happy to do so. And, so, you know, just chatting through the different records and how we can compile it and what records would be able to be in there. So yeah, that's how it started.
Okay then, so can you share why you are officially amazing? What is your Guinness World Record and how was it officially confirmed?
Yes, I can indeed. So my official Guinness World Record, it is for the most miniature golf courses visited. And that record stands at a total at press time.
Okay.
Of 902 is the total number. So the number that Emily and I at current time have visited mm-hmm. together is 1043.
Wow.
And the number with me, Emily, and one of my brothers, who was there on the very first course visit we did back in Southsea in 2006, together we've done 1088. The 902 number, of which Emily has visited over 800 of those, mm-hmm. was the number that we were able to submit that with at that time with definitive proof of there being a course, photographic proof, evidence, log, number of holes, spreadsheet details to the nth degree, you know, very, very rigorous checking. And I'm not saying my 1043 number that is incorrect, but at that time, you know, because some of the courses we visited over the years, you know, it might just be there's a hole in the ground, there's nothing around it, or a bit of the course might be in a hedge. You know, there's some of the courses that we've been to. So, but 902 was at that time, that was the number of courses that we've been to, that I've been to, because that was the other decision to make. Was it going to be a record that I held, or was it jointly Emily and I? And because while Emily has been to the majority of the courses with me, there are quite a few when I've played tournaments, you know, travel to tournaments on my own, or if I've been, you know, traveling to and from somewhere, my spidey sense will go off and I'll see or think, oh, there might be a course over that way, and just head off in that direction and find a course over the last, you know, 17 years. So yeah, it was very interesting to go through it, and also to go back through the records. That was one of the interesting things as well, because we've got the blog and we've got the list of courses we've been to, and you know, Facebook memories is very handy for reminding me of places that we've been to as well, and it was really good at sort of triggering some of those memories, especially, you know, 2009 to 2012, and thinking about all the different road trips that we've been on, and you know, visiting 30 40 50 60 courses at a time, and you know, and some of the courses I didn't necessarily forget them, but some of them I hadn't necessarily blogged about massively, so it's like reminding me to go back, revisit them, and some of the courses that we've got great memories of, you know, thinking about, well, where, you know, next summer we should go to Skegness again. There are about three or four courses that are there now that weren't there when we last visited. So it'd be a fantastic place. And again, we can tick a few more off on our list and you know, have a few more games and a bit more fun. So
yeah, when it came to providing the evidence, you must have been so glad that you are notoriously one of the most anal people in UK minigolf.
I don't know whether to take that as a compliment or not, but yeah, certainly.
Richard, were the courses that you visited, how do they count each individual course? So you have some facilities such as Hastings, the fantastic Hastings Adventure Golf, where they've got three courses. In your 902, would that venue, which I know you've played all three at, does it count as one or three?
Well, that would actually count as four, because what you're not counting is the miniature golf
miniature,
which itself wasn't even the original, because if you go back even further, and I have played this as a kid, I haven't found the photos yet, but my parents and my little brother did find, we've still got a free game card from Hastings Adventure Golf in the 1980s, signed by Chris Richards, the owner. He said, yeah, it's still valid if you want to use it. It's like, no, we're not going to give that up.
Okay, so what you've done is sort of broken this record, travelled all of these courses, and then the Guinness World Record book got in contact, and then you retroactively worked out with this excellent documentation how to turn that into a record. I suppose, conversely, now we have Cole Hetzel, who, Cole, I believe that you actually set out on a mission to break a Guinness World Record, and then you involved mini golf. Can you talk about what your journey looked like there and what you did?
Yeah, sure thing. I guess similar to Richard, it started when I was young, you know, had a bit of a fascination with the book, had a copy in my living room, was like, oh, I'd always love to land myself in the Guinness Book of World Records. And so this miniature golf record was actually not my first. Back in 2020, me and a group of friends set a record for the longest game of wiffle ball at 30 hours. And then we weren't satisfied. And my friend who helped me organize that, he said, hey, why don't we go after another one? And so we broke the record for the longest game of four square playground game at 30 hours. And then someone broke the wiffle ball. So we did that one again. So this was my fourth foray into the Guinness world, I suppose. Yeah. It's a bit of an addiction at this point.
Sure. So you seem to have a thing for endurance records. So after you did the wiffle ball and the playground game, what led your mind towards mini golf as your next endurance test?
The reason I was interested in mini golf is just because I was already part of the local tournaments at the Putt-Putt down the street, and was good friends with the owner, Kevin Shea, and he's the one who jokingly suggested, he said, hey, you and your father have done several of these records. Why don't you do one here at Putt-Putt? And I thought he was kidding at first, but he was really interested. I said, okay, let's do this. I was already experienced with the sort of documentation that Guinness requires. So I'm like, yeah, we should be able to pull this off. So that's what led me to want to attempt the miniature golf record. And it was quite easy from there to find a group of four guys from our group of local tournament players who were willing to go the distance.
Yes. Okay. So can you share then why you are officially amazing? What is the Guinness World Record or the mini golf related Guinness World Record that you currently hold?
Sure thing. Yeah. So the official title is most miniature golf holes in 24 hours, four ball. Four ball meaning it was a group of fours.
And do you know how many holes it was in 24 hours?
Yes, it was 2,097.
That's amazing. Now, I'm interested in, is there any kind of specific preparation that you do for this kind of endurance? Did you set out on a training regime or anything like that to make sure you were in the right sort of headspace, right kind of physicality, ready to break the record?
Yeah, there was definitely some prep involved in getting myself in the right headspace, but it helps that I'm a distance runner, so I suppose I've always been attracted to endurance. So just from doing my regular running, that sort of got me in the right headspace. And then as far as specific preparation, we met as a group and did a practice trial run of about 3 hours where we went to the course and set up all our equipment and had some of the witnesses who would document the attempt for us. They were present there just so we could do a dress rehearsal of sorts to prepare.
Yeah, I see that the record that you actually beat had been set many years before in 2005. And you beat it, I think, by over 700 holes. Was that an aim to beat it by as much as possible? Did you have a figure in mind, like over 2,000 holes? Or did you just want to beat it by one so that you could say you hold it?
No, we definitely had it in mind from the beginning that we wanted to crush the record by as much as possible. I mean, as to what mark we were going to hit, we didn't necessarily know. But yeah, definitely over 2,000 was the goal, and we ended up achieving it.
And so can you talk us through the dynamics of the actual day then? So when the day arrived, when did it start? How you felt to begin with? When it started to get difficult, if it did start getting difficult at all, when the kind of challenge came in? Could you sort of give us a picture of how the day was for you and your friends?
Yeah, sure thing. So when we got set up that morning, a couple hours before, there was a light rain in the air. So we were a bit concerned about that with the camera equipment. So in fact, just 15 minutes prior to the start of the attempt, which it was scheduled to start at 8 a.m. So at 7:45, I was still up there on the roof of the putt-putt readying the cameras. But so it was a bit stressful getting everything in place. But as soon as the bell was sounded at 8 a.m. And the event got underway, we all quickly got into a zone. And within the first few rounds, we were settled into a rhythm and started just racking up rounds. And you asked when it got difficult. I'd say when it first got dark, it was sort of a thrill. It's like, oh, we're playing under the lights. But sometime in the wee hours of the night, around 2, 3 a.m. is when it really got tough, up until the sun rose the next morning.
So that's when you started to have about 6 hours left, so the final quarter.
Yes, yeah, and our cadence slowed significantly during those last 6 hours, as you could imagine.
And then was there a time where you could kind of see the end in sight and it became a little bit easier again?
Yeah, I'd say that was around 6 a.m., so with 2 hours to go, a crowd started to amass because Kevin, the owner, made a whole event out of this, a community event. He set up some food trucks and music, so a lot of people just from the town came out to cheer us on. So when that happened and coincided with the sun rising, that's when we knew the end was near.
Oh, that sounds really, really fun. That's a great thing for the owner to do as well. I love that support from the owner. That's great.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely a great event for him, for the community, and also for his business. I mean, he noticed a uptick in business afterwards. And in fact, that course, Erlanger, also hosted the Putt-Putt National Championships this year, which I and Greg, another guest you have today, we both competed in. So two major events in two consecutive years for Kevin.
How was the sort of camaraderie in the group? Were you all kind of egging each other on? Did it help to have your friends there? Were you kind of taking turns picking each other up when one of you got down? What was the vibe like in the group?
For sure, yeah, it definitely helped having my dad there, having been through several of these endurance events with him before. And then the other two, I mean, I had several friends in this group of tournament players, but we picked the team specifically because we knew we all had good chemistry and we knew we'd be able to go the distance. And yeah, there were certainly times where some of us were feeling down. Like I recall, I think it was 3 a.m., Tony and I, we were taking a break and Tony and I were lying on a mat and we were both feeling pretty down, but the other guys picked us up. And so, yeah, it was definitely a good camaraderie between the four.
So, Cole, you mentioned putt-putt and your time spending 24 hours attempting to get the most mini golf holes. You played putt-putt a lot and so have so many people across America and the wider world. But there is one definition of perfection in putt-putt, and only one definition of perfection: to score a perfect round of 18 during tournament play. Only four people ever in the history of putt-putt has managed to do this, and we have one of them with us today. Greg Newport, can you, first of all, when did this happen, your perfect round of 18?
It was on July 10th, 2016. It was Richmond, Virginia. One of the courses there, we were playing a tournament called the Virginia Open, which is basically it's a major tournament on their tour, on the Virginia tour. And it's a 6-round tournament, and I did it in the 5th round of the 6-round tournament. So that was a big surprise, definitely.
So what was the day like? Were the conditions like? Did you feel like it was a good day? It was your 5th round in the tournament when it happened. So what were the other 4 rounds like at all? Was there anything in your head, whether how you've been playing, anything like that, that before you started your 5th round, that you thought today might be a little bit different?
Well, it's kind of weird in the fact that that particular day, It was very, it was sunny and hot, which it was like close to probably over 90 degrees Fahrenheit that day, which, you know, under putt-putt conditions on those type of carpets, it's actually not conducive to great scoring. Now, usually we start at like 9:30 in the morning. So usually when you play in the morning, the carpets are kind of laid down pretty well and they roll out very well. So you can score better in the morning than you can in the afternoon. So we played three rounds and I was leading after three rounds. And we took a lunch break and we came back in the afternoon. And the fourth round, I didn't finish very well at all. And I lost the lead. I led after the first three rounds. And then the fourth round, I lost the lead. And I was upset at myself with the way I finished that fourth round. So for it just seemed a little bit different to me when I came back. I was upset with myself at first, but before I started that fifth round, all of a sudden the light just came on to a focus that I very rarely get to, and just a focus that, you know, I said to myself, I'm going to shoot a good round. I'm going to shoot a good round. Never imagine 18 in my head, because that's one thing in mini golf, you know, perfection. You're not looking to shoot perfection. You're just looking to shoot the best round you could possibly shoot at the time. And I felt like I was going to have a very good round, but little did I know that the putts just kept on falling, and I hit the ball about as good as I ever hit the ball that round. And every putt I hit was pure into the heart until we got to the last hole. And then once I looked at it, and that's the situation too, is that on that particular course, there are two holes that we call like stoppers. It's like hole 14 and hole 17 on that course. They were very tough holes to make, especially hole 17. As hole 17, I aced that hole one time the entire weekend, and I'm glad it was the time that I did make it. But
wow,
it was the only time I aced it the entire weekend, because it's a very tough hole to ace. So I never really thought about shooting an 18 until I made hole 17, because I could see that in the back of my mind out there. And, you know, I never really thought about, okay, I'm going to shoot an 18. And I never really go into any round that I play saying I'm going to shoot an 18. It's just, you know, you go out there and you try to make every hole. Of course, it's not possible in most cases, but in that particular round, I had a focus that was just there. It was nothing. It just felt like nothing was going to get in my head. And when I got to the last hole, and after I made hole 17, I kind of looked and I was like, wow, you know, made hole 17, a fist pump. Okay. And I turn around, look at hole 18, and it's like it all hits that one time. And
wow.
I was like, what am I about to do here? And of course, the entire tournament stopped once they knew what was going on. And an interesting fact about that was, in that tournament, one of the other four players to shoot an 18, Rick Baird, he was playing in that tournament as well. And a guest that you had before, Vinette Block, she was actually playing in the tournament as well. And I made hole 15 and I looked up and she was like on hole 9, which is kind of on the other side of the course. And I looked at her and I flashed five fingers three times, meaning okay, 15 for 15. And Vinette just dropped her mouth. And then she started. Vinette is one of the fastest players you'll ever play with in your life. But she slowed down. She kind of stopped the tournament a little bit. And then I made hole 16. And she was sitting on the bench right there on hole in between 16 and 17. And I told her, I made the comment of, if I make hole 17, look out. And she kind of stopped the tournament right there and started telling people, okay, he hasn't missed yet. And so, you know, and that's the one round where I never really thought about missing a hole. And for some reason, I get to hole 18 that round, and I'm looking at the hole, and I'm about to hit. So I go through my usual my practice routine, take a couple of practice swings, and go stand over the ball. And my hands were shaking so bad I couldn't hit the putt. Wow. And so I had to back off, and I'm looking around, and I'm kind of walking around laughing at myself, you know, just laughing. And then and then I look over and I see Rick standing there watching, and I didn't say it to him. I just kind of thought, you know exactly how I feel right now.
Mm.
And he's the only one there that would know exactly how I feel right now. And so once I got back over the ball, and I tried to make everything as normal as possible, just like my normal routine. And I stand up over the ball again, and my hands were shaking a lot less. And I thought, okay, I can hit the ball. And fortunately, it went in. I can't remember much about it except the fact that it did go in. But that was definitely a surreal moment. Hard to believe. It's, you know, only four people in America have done that, and it's just so difficult to do. But I'm very fortunate to be in that group.
I do find that a fun sort of juxtaposition between you've got the likes of Kung, who set out and planned to break a record and hold one, and then you've got the likes of yourself, who even midway through that round had no idea that this is where you'd end up in the Guinness Book of Records talking about it now. So I believe that's four of you in 69 years, so that's over 17 years as an average between, if you split them out evenly. But you are a top player. So in the back of your mind, when you played putt-putt, did you think one day I'd like to hit one of these, or did you never consider it?
Well, the interesting thing about that was, before I shot the 18, and I've had previous rounds before where in 2014, I made the first 15 of a round, and that was in a national tournament in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I started the national tournament. I made the first 15 holes. That honestly I thought I was going to do it then, because the last three holes on that course were very aceable. I felt like I could do it then, but I didn't. I missed hole 16, and I think I missed 16 and 17 and made 18 to end up shooting 20. But I also had not only that, but in 2013, I started one round making the first 14. And I actually missed the last four holes that round, which that was in Burlington, North Carolina, on the road course there. So I've actually aced the first 13 twice before that. And actually it was 2014 as well. I made the first 13 on the same course to end up shooting 18 on, and missed hole 14. That's why I was describing that hole 14 was kind of a stopper on that course in Richmond, because it did stop one of my strings. I made the first 13 and ended up missing hole 14. So I've been close before. I was very close one round where I really thought I could do it. But then this round just seemed like, you know, I think you're going to do it. And but like I said, I never really thought about shooting an 18 until I made hole 17 in Richmond. But the one where I made the first 15, I thought I was going to do it then, because, like I said, the last three holes were actually better than the three holes that were in Richmond to play. So I've been close before. So I guess in a way it was kind of leading up to it, but I will say since then I haven't come that close. I think since then I think the longest streak I've had was maybe the first 10. But you know, it's weird. Sometimes you got in the back of your mind that you could do it again. That one time just isn't enough. But of course you look and you say only four people have done it. It just it just hits when you're like, okay, it's that difficult to do.
I find it interesting that you were signaling to other people on the course that, you know, you were 5 for 5 and watch out. I think if it was me, I would have tried to keep it quiet, but you didn't seem to mind the attention and people stopping the tournament to have a watch.
Well, the only one I told was Vinette. Vinette was the only one I said anything to. And actually, my playing partner that day, Brad Lebo, we kind of, I think we got to about hole 12 or hole 13. And he told me, let's just keep this, you know, down low. You know, we don't want to draw the attention, which, you know, the attention enough is one thing. And I don't have a problem. I've played on TV before. So as far as people watching me around the holes, that never bothered me at all. So
yeah,
people watching, just it didn't bother me. That wasn't the thing at the time I was worried about. It was more worried about, hey, let's stop your hands from shaking so you can hit the putt. But yeah, I mean, the attention was not in my mind. And like I said, I only told one person. Of course, Vinette kind of told everybody else. And then you get to... And then when you get the hole 18 and you got the chance to do it, I mean, it's, you know, that the people didn't bother me at all standing around the hole. And I was hoping they would, because the location hole 18 is on that particular course. There's a lot of foot traffic that goes back and forth on that hole, or not on the hole, but beside the hole to get to the other attractions at the facility. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, okay, they're... The people around the hole are kind of holding everybody back, like, okay, right, let's not get into distractions while he's trying to hit this putt for history. So I was actually thankful for that, and that did happen. But yeah, I mean, the attention really didn't bother me at all. So, okay. And I think I was just so focused that round at a point where nothing was going to bother me. And I never thought about missing hole 18 when I hit it. So that it was, like I said, it was a different feeling, yeah. It was starting every other round like I usually do, but when you get further into the round and you get further into, okay, this could happen, then it's like, okay, this is a little different than the other rounds that I've played. So, but it was great. I mean, it was definitely something to remember.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. You certainly are officially amazing. Congratulations. Martin, you've now set yourself the goal of becoming a Guinness World Record holder with a mini golf related record. And maybe some people listening after this, or maybe some people already had that same goal, have that same mission as you do. Can you talk a little bit about what the preparation looks like? So how you're looking at records, how you're deciding what to go for, and then how you have to look at the criteria and the preparation and that kind of thing?
Yes. So just to premise this, I'm the one of the four who isn't yet officially amazing. But that's the plan. It's a bit of a bucket list thing, shall I say, to get one of the certificates on the wall in the living room. There's two kind of mini golf related records that we're looking at. One I think is very possible with a bunch of people very shortly. Another will take a bit of work, but it's more along the lines of what Cole has done in the past with an endurance record. So the one that I think we might be able to pull off, and I think I want to get as many people, well, we need to get as many people involved as we can, is a record for the most amount of players to play a game, a round of miniature golf in an hour. That record currently sits at what I believe is a very, very, very achievable target. Of 30
people in and out. Do they all have to start on lane number one?
Yes, everyone starts at lane one, and as we do in competitive play, player two cannot start the hole until player one has finished, and so on. The idea is get as many people in a queue, so to speak, to get around the course as quickly as possible and get as many to play it through as we can in 1 hour. The other record I'm looking at doing is similar to the wiffle ball one that Cole played, is the longest marathon playing miniature golf.
Oh, okay. So this one is potentially unlimited.
Yes.
Ah, that's interesting.
And but yeah, that one as you can imagine, is going to take a lot more preparation.
Okay, and in terms of the criteria for the longest marathon, are players allowed a break, or is it just from start to finish, everyone on the mini golf course?
For the marathon one, the player who is attempting the record, or players if they are playing in a group, you can, for any marathon record with Guinness, you can accumulate 5 minutes of rest time for every completed hour.
Okay.
You don't have to use it every hour. You can, as I say, you can accumulate them, but though that time then cannot be saved up and added at the end of the record.
Sure.
This does seem like the number of players in an hour. When I've looked at that record, I thought, well, surely that has happened in every BMGA tournament ever. And then I think, actually, no, in a tournament, you might get about the first 9 holes played in an hour with the play of the slow play of some players. But I don't know if Martin has looked, he probably has in depth, but that record of the most people to play a round of miniature golf in 1 hour was set at Adventure Island in Southend-on-Sea.
Southend-on-Sea, yes.
Which used to be the host venue of the British Masters. I made my debut there on the BMGA Tour back in 2007. But did Martin look at the other criteria?
I think I know where you're going with this one. Yes, it's not a set criteria for the record, but I think you're going with the choice of attire during the record, aren't you?
I am indeed. I mean, it might not be a deal breaker for some. It might actually, you know, encourage a few more people to come along to play.
Not if you've seen mini golfers, Richard.
So explain the attire criteria.
Well,
lack of attire.
I can read it out here. I mean, I'm looking at the source, which is GuinnessWorldRecords.com. The most people to play a round of miniature golf in 1 hour is 30, and was organised by Adventure Island, UK, Adventure Island in Southend-on-Sea, Essex, UK, on 25th of March, 2012. Although the participants were naked during the attempt, this was not a requirement for the record. And there's a picture of a player. Technically, he's naked, I suppose. It looks like he's wearing like a wristband, like a sweatband. He's got a pair of trainers on and he's holding his scorecard. But naked apart from the putter is holding there. So that is quite a record, isn't it?
I'm not sure discussions about naked mini golfers is anything we need to have at the moment. So we'll move on.
Now, we've heard stories, amazing stories, from all four of our guests. Simon, normally at this point we would wrap up the podcast, but just quickly, you have one surprise for everyone.
So tying back into what Martin was just talking about, he's got his two in mind to go for, but one of them he can't do alone. He's going to need the help of 30 plus people to do it, as many as possible. And fortunately, the community that listen to this podcast, and a lot of you are in the UK, that helps, would be the perfect people to do it. People that know a course inside out, and often some of us, maybe not all of us, don't take many shots to do it. So we take as little shots as possible and we know the course inside out. If Martin can help us and he can find a course that fits the criteria and make it happen, then this is something that as a community, through the podcast and through Martin, we can make happen together. How do you feel about that, Martin?
Well, I'll say definitely, I've already set it as it's not Martin Williams who'd be attempting that record, it is the 54 Problems podcast.
Yeah, which is hugely exciting for me to see that, because he had already registered this as his attempt. So it's in motion, it's been changed over to us as a community, and it's now a case of making it happen. I'd like to think we've got the friends in the game to make this something we could easily do. So, yeah, that's one for next year. And anybody listening to this podcast can come and be a part of it, hopefully. And next time we have this discussion, maybe we'll all have our tiny little slice of immortality. That'd be nice.
So on that note, do watch this space. I would like to give my sincere thanks to all of our wonderful guests for taking the time to come on today to share their stories. It's been a fantastic episode and it's been wonderful to hear from you all. So With that said, it's goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Richard.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Martin.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Greg.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye from Cole.
Goodbye.
And it's a goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.